Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. This is Floss Weekly, Episode 5, for May 10th, 2006. Miguel de Icaza. Back again talking about free, libre, and open source software, and Chris DeBona is here, open source program manager for Google, and we thank Google for providing you with your very own room for this now.
Well, we're not quite in the room, but it's beautiful. I got to see it yesterday and sit down in it, and it's one of these oppressively quiet rooms.
They think
it's so quiet, it's weird.
They think you need a radio studio to do this, but that's okay. We won't disabuse them of the notion. That's okay. They don't understand. It's just a podcast.
Yeah.
Who do we have today?
Today we're bringing on Miguel de Icaza. Miguel has a very, very long history in open source software. He started something called the GNOME Project with a couple of other folks. And and he started another thing called Mono recently. And Mono is an implementation of .NET technologies on Linux.
Which was very controversial when he announced it, but we'll ask.
Well, sure. A lot of people felt that to do this was to advance a Microsoft agenda, though, I mean, he has such a long history that he's really beyond reproach. But a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, you're handing over the world to these, you know, copyright maximalist, you know, closed source software people. And I've never really thought of it that way because, you know, languages have generally become prominent through the actions of a large backer anyway.
True. Like, you know, Java.
So, yep. Well, yeah, like Java. And I hate to say it, in a lot of ways, Java is less open source than .NET.
That's right. That's right.
Because of the way Microsoft went through the ECMA, ECMA specking of .NET.
Well, and I have to say that when Miguel said, we're going to do Mono, I gave .NET a whole nother look because it convinced me, and I think I'm not alone, that maybe it isn't a closed platform. Maybe it is open. I mean, if Miguel de Icaza can develop for it, then maybe it's not such a bad thing after all. So
that's probably the root of the controversy. People are like, well, you know, people are going to use this because Miguel said it's
Miguel.
Okay.
And
he's making it possible on Linux. But the other side of this is, you know, isn't it cool if we're able to show people, listen, sure, develop using, you know, Visual Studio or whatever, and then you can deploy on Linux where it's going to be, we think, a better experience for you, you know?
It's a wedge into the...
Well, yeah. You know, people always talk about sort of thin ends of the wedge and, you know, so people say, well, isn't Samba just going to make Windows people, you know, not use Linux?
And, quite the opposite, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think it is.
But, absolutely, you know, it is. Yeah.
And I also, I think it's okay for things to work together, you know, in the end. You know,
it's a necessity. Look, we live in the world. You can't, I mean, there are purists out there, and I honor them, but really, we live in the real world.
Yeah, most of us do.
Excited. Let's get to Miguel, because I have to say I'm a Miguel fanboy. I've never had a chance to meet him, and so I'm very excited.
Well, on the show today, we have an old friend of mine, Miguel de Icaza, and Miguel can tell you all about himself, but he's been called many things. The founder of GNOME, the most controversial person in software languages today. Well, maybe not so much, but... Yeah. His work on Mono has been the focus of some fairly remarkable engineering and controversy. But Miguel can probably introduce himself better than I can. Miguel, tell us about yourself.
Oh, well, I'm 33, single. No, I'm not single.
You're not single anymore.
Married to a lovely Brazilian, according to Wikipedia.
The Wikipedia knows everything. Jesus. No, it's one time where we were, when we started in the Zimi, and Nat and myself, we were at some Chinese restaurant here in Cambridge. And we were sitting down, and we could hear these women talking behind us. And all we could hear was, he's 33, he's vegetarian. So I decided I would introduce myself like that.
I'm 33. I'm vegetarian.
Are you vegetarian?
No, I'm not.
No. Because that's inconsistent with our meals together.
It works with the chicks, though.
Oh, no.
But I don't want to out you as a carnivore if you don't want that.
But you know what? Nat is becoming a vegetarian. But I love pork. I love that delicious animal. I love all delicious animals.
Tell us how you got started with the GNOME project.
Oh, GNOME. Oh, Jesus.
Going way back now. History.
I think I sent an email to Richard Stallman and Eric Tron, which was at Red Hat at the time. And I said, hey, guys, you should check this KD thing out. It's pretty sweet. And both of them, I had been working with both in different things. Came back saying, yeah, but the licensing of the underlying Qt is not going to work for us.
Interesting. So it was really in you liked KDE.
Oh yeah, I even sent some patches to KDE back in the day, and then Richard said, "Yeah, but it's not going to work for us." And Eric Tron at Red Hat said the same thing. It's like we can't have that for ISVs. So that's how it started. It got started because of those licensing issues.
Wow, interesting. And you were written to be a GPL based on the GTK. Or did GTK come before GNOME, or did GNOME come before GTK?
Oh, no, GTK came before. Actually, GTK was a toolkit that was being used by the guys who built the GIMP.
That's right. It was GIMP. That's what it means. Yeah, of course.
That's right. So the GIMP guys actually had started using Motif, and I don't know what the
Genesis Motif is not lovely, is it?
Yeah, it's not. It's not.
I suppose we should explain that these are programming frameworks that give you GUI user interface.
You know, like menus, capabilities, drop downs, that kind of thing.
And Motif is one of the oldest. It goes back to pre-Linux.
It's pretty ancient.
Old Unix,
It's also pretty ugly. Anyways, so these guys came up with this new toolkit, which looked very much like Motif, I have to say. But the idea is that it was free as opposed to Motif at the time, which is, I don't know, 1996, 1997.
Motif was even before then, and it was also costly and very difficult to learn and wasn't reliably similar from platform to platform. So
you liked GTK. There was an issue with the license of KDE because of the Qt widgets that KDE decided to use. Red Hat said, we don't want to distribute with KDE. Did they say, would you write a desktop?
They didn't say it, but you know, at the time, many of us were hanging out at this LinuxNet thing, and which was an IRC network where many of the developers were hanging out, and it became kind of an issue, and we started discussing, and a lot of projects had an early origin there, so a bunch of us decided to start working on that. Alan Cox used to hang around there, so he was one of the early guys who worked on Mono. I mean, on GNOME.
Oh, there was a slip.
Elliot Lee, which has kind of disappeared from public life, was one of the... I mean, he wrote a lot of code. I mean, the guy could write code. And Federico Mena was also involved in this thing because he was kind of... he was a maintainer of the GIMP at the time. So it was the three of us that kind of started, and we're trying to build momentum around this thing.
And the time... I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's just one thing. We didn't like GTK at the time. It was just the only thing available.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, the only free thing that we could use.
You would have preferred to use Qt?
I don't know. I mean, I have an allergic reaction to C++. So every time somebody, every time I have to look at C++ code, I develop rashes. So
you in fact wrote GNOME in C.
That's right. Well, my code, most of the stuff that I wrote was in C, but the idea at the beginning was we shouldn't really limit ourselves to C. We should look into other programming languages. So we initially did bindings for Scheme, which was the hot thing.
Scheme? Really? Wow.
1997. It was 1997.
Scheme was never the hot thing.
It wasn't certain. Well, in Cambridge it was hot.
And that's okay.
No,
sorry to bring you down.
No. You're right. It was kind of a distorted reality from those of us which were in touch with the FSF at the time. And I don't know if you remember, but there was this effort to create a universal scripting language that would allow any language to run on top of it, called Guile. And it was based on some on what turned out to be some faulty research papers from a couple of guys at Berkeley, I believe. And the research papers were okay, but as usual with research papers, they measured one thing, but they didn't measure everything. So that got Stallman really excited about Guile, and he started pushing for Guile. So we went down the Guile path, which was obviously a mistake. But you can see some of the ideas that would eventually lead to Mono already present there, which is we wanted to have kind of a runtime for multiple languages in place.
Yeah, no, Guile was it was very Scheme-like itself, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Scheme implementation, and they had built this incredibly complicated. In fact, they had built this thing called Ice9, which I don't think anyone ever figured out what role it played, but you couldn't do anything without Ice9. And I don't think anyone could ever say what exactly Ice9 did inside Guile.
Well, we can make something up. You know, we could say that it was Java. No.
Well, I think it's a reference to one of Vonnegut's books.
That's right, Ice Nine. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Takes over the world or something. Right. That definitely didn't take over the world.
It's interesting how politics, I mean, and I don't mean global politics, but language politics and computer science politics kind of influence this kind of stuff. Would you prefer just to be coding and not worrying about these things?
Oh, I love politics.
Oh, you do?
I mean, I don't love office politics, but I mean, this blog thing and the politics and comments are fascinating.
Really?
Yeah, I found a couple of really interesting, good blogs from a bunch of political commentators, and some of them are really, really smart. And the reason I stopped blogging is because I felt inadequate.
Yeah.
Once you read somebody else writing and you see your blog, and like, well, is it getting an idiot? Yeah. I mean, can this guy put even together a couple of sentences? So I felt that people reading my blog were getting that impression. That
and
I was
you'd be better off
idiot.
Just redirecting them to the blog of this other person.
Well, I'm not redirecting them because it's not...
No, I know.
But, man, there's some brilliant writers out
there. Really are, so, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're very articulate. Yeah. And so anyway, internet thing, I love it.
You don't mind the politics in the open source movement and the fights and the battles and the scheme and
you know
guile
what?
And
at this time, I kind of ignore a lot of those things because they're going to go on and on.
Right.
Like, is Stallman still fighting for Linux versus GNU Linux?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he still is.
Is that still a topic?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
When we were going to have him on Tech TV, he said, I'll only come on if you always refer to it as GNU Linux and not Linux. And some of the shows were willing to do that and some of the shows were not.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. There's a little bit of fundamentalism going on there.
Well, I think he just wants credit, which he perhaps deserves for, the free software and the GNU stuff on Linux.
Yeah.
Anyway, we may interview Richard at some point. I don't want to get in that battle yet.
He's been consistent over the years. I mean, we've all gotten those emails, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we first launched SourceForge, we got an email from him asking us to change every occurrence of Linux with the word GNU Linux on the site.
And you can do it in a simple Perl one-liner, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, but then there's a question. There are other people who really, really dislike this argument.
The other thing is that it also doesn't flow. I mean, it's like...
it doesn't. Yeah. Linux
it's
is
like
so
people
much...
asking you to put dots between letters.
Right.
Or the word theory before the words black hole.
Yeah. You see, it's getting political already.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't go there. People can Google for that if they want to.
Oh, I love that stuff.
So the thing about GNOME is there's always been this like sort of GNOME versus KDE flame war that so many people have seen, maybe not so many nowadays, right?
What is KDE? What is KDE again?
That's why it pleases me to hear that Miguel was a KDE fan who was pushing KDE all along. I think that's...
Well, I thought it was a brilliant idea. Let's get a desktop going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shame that they picked a toolkit that wasn't...
Qt is now GPL and the battle is over, but thank goodness we got a GNOME out of it, or GNOME.
Well, it's really funny.
Is it GNOME or GNOME?
I think it's always been GNOME versus KDE, but it was actually for a while there. GNOME versus KDE versus Next Step versus OpenStep versus Enlightenment.
Enlightenment, let's not forget.
Yeah. And, it's funny because even today when you're using something like KDE or GNOME, you'll find bits from the others like, ESD, which was Enlightenment Sound Daemon, existing within things.
Although Ubuntu has done a lot now to popularize GNOME once again because it's become such a popular distribution, although there is Kubuntu. But
Yeah, then that came out because, I don't know if you want to talk too much about, your work, but Miguel, but I guess when Novell said, well, we're going to concentrate on GNOME, and then there was that big flare-up.
Yeah, well, you can only fund that many projects, so you have to pick your battles.
How much work on GNOME do you still do, Miguel?
Not much. What we do is Mono does provide bindings for developing GNOME applications. So we assist a lot of developers creating GNOME applications, and we're hoping to increase the number of apps available for the platform. But I think that the discussion today is not as much about GNOME itself, because it's only a component, I would say. I think today the ecosystem is a lot larger, and there's a lot of very important pieces that are outside the scope of GNOME. So things like Mozilla, for example, right? I don't believe GNOME should be in the business of creating a new web browser, for instance. Mm-hmm. Mozilla, OpenOffice. And I know the GNOME guys are still building their own office pieces, but they're still many years away from being something that you could just deploy to replace Office, I wrote GNOME Eric, and I still love very much GNOME Eric, but it was obvious that we should that for the general vision of Linux on the desktop, it was better to join forces with Sun and OpenOffice than trying to do our own. And today, OpenOffice, despite of its limitations and whatever perceived problems people have with it, I think it's a better choice for convincing people to use Linux or even Windows to start using an open source solution than going along with our own suite of applications, which are still a few years away from matching people's expectations.
How much are you influenced by what people want of you in terms of choosing your next project? Did you do numeric just because you wanted to do it, or was it because you perceived a need?
Well, at the time, I thought that we needed to have an office suite. This is before OpenOffice became a project, an open source project. So we're thinking, well, what do we need for a full desktop? And so I started working on one of those pieces, which was Numeric, and it was also a very educational exercise.
Mm-hmm, I bet.
But when Sun said, "Hey guys, let's join forces here. Let's do one thing together. Let's work together on this thing, and let's go after Microsoft Office." It made sense. I mean, Numeric, this was in 2000. I mean, Numeric was still not ready. It's still not ready today, 6 years after. And I think it was the right decision to work together with Sun in improving OpenOffice. So you'll see that, for example, through our life at Zemia, we did a lot of contributions to OpenOffice. And we kind of enabled the external development of OpenOffice with a lot of tools that we developed for that. And today we're the second largest contributor. I mean, the first one is Sun to OpenOffice. Mm. So I know that the decision was not very popular with a lot of people. People that say, well, we should be thinking about different ways of attacking the problem, or we should be building smaller tools, or we should innovate, not copy. And I think that all of those are valid points, but there is an immediate need to have something that could replace Office. And just from the position that I was coming from, which is how do we get the Linux desktop adopted, it made sense to work together with Sun, independently of all the probably innovative ideas that were out there. And I think that and one discussion that we've had for a long time is probably one of the most interesting things would be to create not an Office suite, but something that serves a similar purpose on the web, right? And basically, the idea here is that a lot of people have been using Office suites for the wrong purposes, right? People were using Microsoft Word for editing documents and editing memos and sharing documents, but they were probably stretching it. Microsoft Word is fantastic for writing books or writing articles, but isn't necessarily ideal for other kinds of documents that people write. And I think that people like Writely, this company that Google just acquired, are onto something. It's probably the first iteration of the idea, but that kind of shared document editing is onto something, or the Wikipedia, for example.
Do you see Mono as having a role in that kind of web-oriented applications?
No. I mean, you can use it for implementing the application on the back end, but it's not something we are doing directly.
So what kind of challenges have you seen with keeping up with the ECMA spec around Mono? And so what is Mono?
Actually, let's start at the beginning, because I want people to... Yeah.
Oh, so Mono is it's an implementation of a number of technologies, of developer technologies. It's basically a complete development environment. So you have a virtual machine that will run the code, and it's a virtual machine that runs code written in multiple languages. So the popular ones are C# and Visual Basic and now Python and PHP. We also have compilers, some open source compiler that we have developed for it, like the C# compiler, JavaScript, and a couple of those. Google funded the development of PHP.net, which is still an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. And finally, a lot of libraries to complement this thing, right? So all your basic things for reading files, writing files, connecting to a website, that sort of thing. And then there's a couple of larger libraries built on top of this, things for building web applications. One of them is called ASP.NET, right, which a lot of people use in the Windows world. And then Windows Forms for writing client applications. So Mono is a collection of all of those things. And it helps people coming from a Windows background to start bringing their applications to Linux in one hand. And on the other hand, we have selfishly gone and added a lot of extra features to that so we can develop our own applications on Linux. And it's part of a lot of the new things that we've been doing as part of the desktop, photo management, music management, a lot of other things. Like, for example, in fact, Chris was very nice to get Google to fund this project called Diva, which is a video editor, something along the lines of Avid or iMovie for Linux. And
Diva's
and
great.
We're assisting these guys to do this.
Yeah. There was a howl. I mean, a lot of consternation, a lot of shock when it was announced, and maybe maybe mistakenly announced, that Miguel de Acaso was going to develop .NET for Linux. Is that how you would? Is that a mischaracterization of what Mono is?
No, I mean, at the time, the problem is that .NET meant too many things, right? The marketing people at Microsoft had gone kind of crazy and labeled everything .NET.
Say again,
right? So
it's a car. It's a cereal. It's
it was everything. So it was so saying .NET was kind of very confusing to a lot of people. A lot of people thought we were implementing Passport.
So we had single to write sign-on.
Yeah, we had to write a rebuttal about that. And it was just a branding issue. So I think that the way Chris describes it is a lot better. It's an implementation of a bunch of specifications aimed at developers. Just like there's ECMAScript for JavaScript, there's ECMA for the equivalent technologies that Microsoft developed.
Well, and Microsoft maybe used it a little bit disingenuously, you know, saying, look, we're .NET is open, an open platform. Look, Miguel's doing it for open source.
I think they did. In fact, they ran a couple of articles on their website at the time.
Was that an inappropriate use, you think, of your idea?
Well, I think it's a valid thing. I mean, they were advertising the fact that somebody was using the standard.
Right. It is a standard. It's an open standard.
Yes, that's right. It's an ECMA standard, and it's also now an ISO standard. So I guess from the perspective of the guys who spent years writing down, you know, every single bit that had to go into every file format, and describing each one of those, looking at someone implementing that stuff and actually using it for something, I think must have been very good. Right, so it wasn't completely wasted time for these engineers.
Yeah, they were happy.
They were happy.
But so some people saw you as a traitor, though, didn't they?
Yeah, well, but you know, there's a lot of loonies out there.
That's your response. You guys are crazy.
Well, you know. They're not necessarily crazy, but there's a lot of fundamentalism in our community, you know.
Yeah. especially when it comes to Microsoft. You say that's the evil empire, right?
And that I'm sure the Microsoft has done a lot of bad things, and their monopoly thing, and the way they cope with the Netscape situation. But I think we must differentiate the technology from the politics, and that's what was interesting about the ECMA stuff to us.
So
but it was one technology. Yeah.
One thing I was sort of curious about, does the ECMA spec cover sorry about that.
What is ECMA? I've never heard of it. I know what ISO is. Is ECMA another standards body?
Well, it used to stand for European Computer Manufacturers Association Standards Organization, but they changed the meaning to be ECMA Standards Organization. So it's kind of just
ECMA stands for nothing, just like GNOME stands for nothing. Yeah,
exactly. It used to mean something, but it doesn't even really make sense.
So it's an accepted standards body.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
So let me ask you: the interface elements, the WinForms, that kind of thing, are those under the ECMA spec as well? That's one thing I didn't understand.
They're not under the ECMA spec.
And those are the
spec.
Things, by the way, that allow you to create nice interfaces with .NET. So
that's right. So the reason why those things were not on the spec is when we were at the meeting where basically IBM was saying we need to standardize this thing, the Microsoft people said, "Well, if you want to standardize it, go ahead, but we're not going to spend any cycles on that." And at the time they said, and the reason is very simple. I mean, we don't think this is the APIs are as mature, so it's kind of a moving target.
They said it's premature to do this now.
Yes. I mean, the VM was very solid. It hasn't changed much. I mean, they have added things, but they haven't changed it as opposed to the other APIs. And so they say it's changing. And the other thing is that we know, and this was about a year before they announced Avalon, and in fact, we're keeping it on live support at this point because we're going to be moving to a new set of things. And at the time, they didn't tell us what it was.
Yeah, they didn't want anybody to know.
But eventually it came out, and it was Avalon, right? So I knew for a year before Avalon was announced that they were up to something. And it wasn't until the PDC
safe bet.
That I found it. Yeah.
We know they're up to something. So is Mono point-for-point compatible with .NET? Does it do the same things? Is it the same level?
I mean, give or take, you know, it's like saying, is Linux 1.0 the same thing as Unix? It's like, well, it is pretty damn close. Yeah. So,
and is that the goal, the kind of a POSIX compliant from Mono, if there is such a thing?
Yes. Compliant? I mean, the issue that we have today is kind of one of bugs, right? So we are the same module of the bugs, and
unlike Wine, you're not trying to duplicate Microsoft's errors.
No, it's not that. It's just that, you know, you implement something and it's not as you thought it was, right? You read the documentation, right. Even the spec says you have to do this, and you think you implement it correctly, only to find out a few months later that, well, it was there, but it's buggy, right? So I would compare Mono with .NET along the lines of comparing Linux 1.0 with Solaris, right? Okay. So is it a full Unix implementation? Well, it feels like one. It behaves like one. But every once in a while, you'll run into things that are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of at that stage today with Mono. And we're moving towards better compliance, better compatibility, and so on. But I wouldn't say it's 100% compatible. The binaries run, but every once in a while you'll find some different, a couple of side effects. So our recommendation to people today is, well, develop with .NET if you want, but before you say this runs on Linux, just make sure that you test it on Linux, right? So I would say porting today applications from .NET to Linux is as complex as it was to port a Solaris application to Linux.
That's not so bad, though.
No.
It's not so bad, but you have to make some changes, right? Imagine that the Solaris used, streams, right? So you need to port it to the sockets API.
Right.
It's not as bad, but every once in a while, you're running to a Windows system to Linux system thing, right? Like file names in Windows are case insensitive, and Linux are case sensitive. So there's a little bit of work that you have to do, but it's not a matter of... People are not forced to make the choice of, should we rewrite all of this in another language and start from scratch? They're not faced with the option of, that's just not economically possible. Let's just not consider Linux at all. And now they have an option of spending a week porting and testing and fixing and getting their software running on Linux, which we think it's fantastic.
So Novell bought Symeon, and I guess in the process kind of acquired the Mono project, or it became... They took the lead of it. So mm-hmm. do you work for Novell or?
Oh, I work for Novell. Yeah, I'm a Novell employee.
Interesting. How's that been?
And we'll deliver any kind of network solutions that you might need. I'm kidding. We're now a Linux company. Now Novell is a Linux company.
No more
people
network.
People think of Novell as a network company.
I actually
didn't they do network? Like, yeah, that's what they used to do a few years ago, but now we do Linux.
I don't know about you, Chris, but I was kind of encouraged when Novell picked up Symeon. I thought, well, this, you know, between SUSE and Symeon, it really looks like here's a company who sees Linux on the desktop and really wants to support it.
And is trying to rebuild themselves into something interesting.
Interesting. And
I don't mean that in a weird way. I mean,
no, they picked the cream of the crop, don't you think?
Well, sure.
Oh, I like that. You know who you should interview, which you should really interview, is Nat Friedman.
Oh, I completely agree.
Who's he?
Because Nat's a co-founder of Symeon.
Nat's amazing.
Yeah, he's extremely funny, not like me, boring and stupid. But what is interesting about...
But he's not nearly as self-deprecating, Miguel.
Yeah, maybe. So we kind of split the work. I went and did the developer platform, and he went and continued the... He took the desktop ball and ran with it.
And Evolution was the key product at that time.
Well, that was one of them, but now he's in charge of the desktop effort at Novell.
For SUSE as well.
For SUSE, yeah. Oh, okay. And I think we've got a fantastic Linux desktop. I mean, the one that we're about to launch is probably the best Linux you've ever seen on the desktop.
Is this the one that's based around XGL?
Yeah, it has XGL, and it has Beagle, and it has... Drool.
Is that going to be a SUSE, or what is that going to be called?
I don't know what the branding is this
Magic,
week.
Magic Linux?
I think it's going to be called SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop or something like that.
Open desktop.
I don't know. I'm not in marketing.
But
I think we've got ourselves a fantastic, beautiful Linux
product. I can't wait to see that. How far off is that?
I think we release in July. So that's 2 months from now?
That's very exciting.
Yeah, we release in July.
How important is Mono to that? Is Mono a key part of that?
Oh, yeah. Many of the applications that we built, Beagle, for example, which is the desktop search, was built completely on Mono. It's built with Lucene. Mm-hmm. What else? Phono management.
I live in Doug Cutting's old house, by the way.
Who's Doug Cutting?
He's the guy who wrote Lucene.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Is that weird?
Of course. Yes, I'm an idiot.
How did that work out, by the way, Leo?
Well, I was buying a house. He lives in the same town I do. And I walked in a polo shirt with tux on it. And he said, "I like that shirt." And I said, "Oh, yeah, who are you?" He said, "I'm Doug Cutting." And I said, "Oh." And he has a lovely house, had a lovely house where I live now. And I feel the open source vibes in the walls. Nothing. I've preserved the room where he wrote Lucene and Nutch, and it's exactly as it always was.
And you're not going to touch it.
I'm going to put a plaque on the building.
And one of those little sort of velvet ropes, keep people from
walking. No, he's a great guy, actually. It's a small world. But sure. So is Mono the premier, kind of key development environment then for this new SUSE?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we still develop a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff was written in C, a lot in C++, a lot in... you have to maintain existing code with the language that it was, right? So right. OpenOffice is all C++, although we now provide Mono bindings, which is quite exciting. Mm. So you can develop... You can build OpenOffice-based applications with Mono,
Go ahead.
Here's a question for you. Is there more Mono in your desktop than in Vista?
That's a fantastic question. I think there might be.
There's Mono in Vista?
No.
.NET. .NET.
Oh, okay.
I think it might be.
I was going to say.
That might be the case.
Interesting.
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know how much .NET code they're shipping. You know that they have to throw away three years of work and start from scratch. I think that whoever was behind that, somebody needs to write a book and for generations to come.
What did they throw away?
I'm serious.
Did they throw away all the...
Well, actually, they did. It's called Apocalypse Now. No, I'm kidding.
The horror. What did they throw away? I mean, I know they threw away the file system. Did they throw away...
My understanding from reading the article in the Wall Street Journal from a guy who basically interviewed all the people involved in this thing is that apparently... After WinXP shipped, they basically said, well, the senior team is going to remain and it's going to harden XP to create a server product, right?
Yeah.
XP server that became Windows Server 2003. And then kind of the junior team, they were kind of left without adult supervision and went to create Longhorn. So when the other guys were done in 2003...
So what did you do?
And they kind of merged the teams. Exactly, that's what happened.
What is this? And they tried
to fix the mistakes, but 6 months or 9 months into the thing, after 2003 shipped, they basically said, we can't fix this thing.
Yeah.
And they brought in some guy that said, we have to reset the clock. And they basically took Windows Server 2003 and had to start from scratch. So that's why Longhorn is kind of just an incremental release now. It's not the big vision thing that they had intended it to be.
Speaking as a developer, though, Miguel, don't you think sometimes that's the best way to work on a program is to write an iteration and throw it out and start over? Have you ever done that?
I mean, I can do that, but it's one guy.
It's painful.
And it's probably for a month-long project, you know? Right. I mean...
You can't but throw away 30 million lines of code.
That hurts.
Yeah, I mean, how many people, how much code they threw away? I have no idea.
Millions.
That's why I want a book
hours.
Written about this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I am kind of more interested in the archaeology of software than software itself, Kind of who said what, when, what did people do,
I think that's an idea for a podcast.
Well, I think it's fascinating.
And I agree with you.
All those history books, all the software books that talk about how things happen. I think those are fascinating. That's my favorite reading.
There's a great book
for a while.
There's a great book on NT on the NT development process. Showstoppers. Yeah. Love that.
Another one of my favorite books for the startup guys is a book called High Stakes, No Prisoners. Have you ever read it?
No. What's that about?
Well, it's a guy who did a startup. He did some software product that eventually became Microsoft FrontPage.
Vermeer.
Yeah, and the guy didn't like Microsoft when he started his company, feared Microsoft, didn't like Microsoft as he was selling the company to Microsoft, and didn't like Microsoft afterwards, after he became a millionaire from Microsoft. But what is interesting is that the guy made so much money on this transaction that he was able to write this book and tell you everything that you couldn't really read anywhere because people are being polite and they're trying not to burn bridges. This guy burned every bridge in town. I mean,
that sounds good. I'm writing that book down. That sounds fantastic.
But
what was his name? Because, I met him at
Ferguson something. Charles Ferguson, maybe? Let me do some Googling. High Stakes. No.
Google.
While Miguel is Googling, Showstopper is written by Greg Zachary, who's actually been on Twit and is a great journalist. He writes
a familiar name. I don't know why.
Yeah, he writes for Web 2.0. He was at the Wall Street Journal, and he got unusual access to Dave Cutler and that whole team, and really wrote an incredible book about.
And that's Showstopper, that one?
Showstopper. And, you know, it's like the soul of the new machine, the classic, the Tracy Kidder classic.
Right.
Oh, I've never read that one.
Oh, that's, that's ancient history. But well worth reading, yeah.
Yeah, Kaplan's Startup was pretty interesting, too.
Which one is that one?
Startup, it was about the Go Corporation.
Yeah, that's quite a story.
I've heard about that one. I've never read it.
It's worth reading. It's pretty short, too, so you can burn through it pretty quick.
All right. What's interesting about all these books is we never learn from these mistakes. We recreate these mistakes over and over, and you start to realize, well, boy, if they just read this book, they would have known not to do that.
Well, the funny thing is they all have in common is this element of Microsoft, too.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe that's the mistake.
It just seems to be humanity's problem, right? We never learn from history.
So what is your relationship to Microsoft, Miguel? How do you feel about that?
They date and no.
What is our relationship? Well,
how do you feel about
it? She's 33. She's a vegetarian.
she's from Brazil.
I don't know. What is a relationship? We have a personal relationship and we have kind of a professional relationship through ECMA. So we see some of the guys involved in ECMA every once in a while.
To you, they're not a monolith. They're people.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you have to distinguish between the corporation and the individuals. Mm-hmm. And everyone that I've met through ECMA has been fantastic.
Yeah.
They're hackers just like us, right?
Right.
And everybody that you meet at the conferences, at the PDC.
When they let you in.
Yeah, when they let me in. but no, they're great guys. And in fact, I ran into some guys working on the WinFS, this thing that got chopped off. From Vista, and it turns out that the guys, at least the guy running the team and a bunch of the engineer came from Cygnus.
Oh, interesting.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, that's right. So they left Cygnus, I think, before or shortly after the acquisition, around the time of the acquisition that Red Hat acquired them, and they went to Microsoft. I mean, they were kind of like open source guys. With this thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was funny. So I think engineers are, as I said, the archaeology of these things is fascinating, and
engineers are engineers the world over. It doesn't matter who writes the
book. Well, they're nice people. There's always nice people, and then there's always the strange people. And
you've met them,
you've seen them.
And then there's management, and we just stay away from them. Yeah.
So we have a relationship at that level. That's it.
Yeah.
There was something about them not letting you run a BOF at PDC.
That was sleazy.
What happened?
We applied for a BOF. It is the second time that we applied to host a BOF at the conference, right?
And what's a BOF?
You know how BOFs work, right?
No. Tell us about BOFs.
BOFs are these meetings that happen usually after hours.
Birds of a feather, it stands for.
Right.
That's right. So basically, when you have a bunch of people that go to a conference, you hold a BOF together. And the BOFs don't necessarily have to be related to the conference. Like, for example, you could have a bird watcher's BOF. So you get together a couple of bird watchers.
If you like nuthatches, you would all get together and talk about nuthatches.
That's right. There are people who are like excited about Ruby, right?
Right.
Let's say that even there's not a Ruby track, there would be people excited about Ruby, right? At JUSNIC, there's used to be for a very long time, one of the funniest BOFs was the member of the same sex BOF.
If you're a boy, you're a member.
That's right. And then there was the obfuscated C code contest, right?
BOF. That's fun.
So they had all these different things, which might be related, but not absolutely to the conference. So we asked for a BOF, and we got a lot of people. In the first year, we got a lot of people voting for it. And Microsoft quietly said, well, you didn't get enough votes. You're kidding me. We got more than most of your people. So we kind of have to hold a BOF impromptu on the hallway without any endorsement and without any rooms or projectors. And that was a lot of fun. And the second year, we did the same thing, and they delisted us. They claimed that they had too many good proposals for BOFs, and they couldn't host us.
What do you think their beef was?
No, I don't. I think they. I think that they want to ignore that Linux exists. I mean, during the whole keynote, they didn't mention one time Linux. And I went to the. Well, I attended most of the keynotes. Some of them got pretty boring by the middle, but they didn't mention one time Linux.
Well, it's weird too because so many people are using Mono to host .NET servers on Linux. You know.
Yes, yes. So, okay. I don't know. I guess they're obviously threatened by your direction and power and...
Well, if you weren't so manly, Miguel.
That's right. That is my promise. I'm like, I'm the Stephen Colbert of the industry.
Who has who has more to lose, though? Microsoft.net or Java? I mean, don't you in some ways hurt Java even more?
Well, I don't know about that because, you know, Mono is a universal runtime. So we actually run Java code. For example, you know that... Do you know that Eclipse, the first time that Eclipse ran with a jitter on Linux was with Mono?
Huh, really?
No kidding.
Yeah. I think somebody else ran it, but it took like 10 days to run.
Jitter is so just-in-time compilation.
That's I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't even know if I need to define these things, but I just want to make it as accessible to everybody as possible.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll try to be more less
I told somebody the other day I've made a living by overestimating my audience, but maybe sometimes I should underestimate a little bit.
So anyways, we have nothing against Java. We love the Java guys.
So the Mono VM isn't in competition with Java. It supports Java.
That's right. That's right.
Interesting.
In fact, we ship
that.
It. We ship it with Mono. And the other day I was at a bank whose name will remain confidential. And
does it rhyme with Bank of America?
I can't say that. I can't say that. Jesus Christ.
Does it rhyme
not going to get anything out of me.
Does it rhyme with Smells Margot?
Jesus.
I really don't know people. I'm just giving them.
Oh, you're going to keep trying, aren't you?
I just want to tell you, Miguel, try this with Google NDA stuff and see how he feels.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. Do we have anyone from Google here?
No.
She will be on the other foot very quickly.
My name's Leo. I don't know what you're talking about.
You see? Anyway, you were in a bank, Miguel.
You were in a bank.
Oh, and they were using IKVM to run software. I mean,
really?
They were not using Mono directly, but they were using this Java VM to run a bunch of old Java code on top of .NET.
Hey.
I have to say it's pretty sweet that that banks are using these open source technologies to get their software running. So, anyways, I was there pitching Mono, of course, as you can imagine.
Is all of Zimian in Mono?
No. Zimian had a bunch of different products, and we were kind of split when the acquisition happened. One group does system updates and system management. That was Red Carpet, and that became part of a thing called ZenWorks at Novell. Then the Linux Desktop group, which is under NAT, continues doing Linux Desktop, and my group continued to do Mono.
All right.
So those were kind of the three big groups.
So what's coming from Mono? If there's one thing you want to point out that's sort of close to being released, what would it be?
Mono FS.
The Windows Forms support. So historically, we've supported on the client GTK Sharp, but that's a Unix technology. It's not really a migration technology for Windows people. And we supported ASP.NET on the server. So if you want to run your ASP.NET apps, we will do it. And now we're kind of adding to the mix Windows Forms, which is the client solution from Microsoft. So that's probably the largest thing. More geeky people will be interested that we finally have an IDE that has everything integrated, the Mono
really?
Develop thing. Yeah. We're actually adding a lot of the things that thanks to Google, we funded last year. So those things mature, and we're now putting them in.
Cool.
And it's for C# as well as Java and other...
Yes, yeah. And Boo. It supports this cute little language called Boo.
Boo?
Yeah, Boo.
Hey, Boo, Boo.
It's a Python. It's Python with optional typing.
Oh, interesting.
It means nothing to most of the people.
Yeah, it's big in the .NET space. I don't think anyone in the Linux space even knows what it is, but it's big in the Windows world. So we do support that and a lot of other things.
So instead of Eclipse, you'd say use Mono, or is it?
Yeah. Well, you know, this Mono develop thing started actually as a dog fooding project, right? A couple of guys in the community decided we're going to build an IDE on top of Mono, and I said, "That's crazy! Don't waste your time." and they did it anyways, and now it's a real thing. And what was interesting is that the thing exposed so many problems in Mono that we use it routinely to make sure that everything is fine.
Oh, interesting.
You know? So it's a big dog fooding project for my team at this point. So it's kind of a big test that we run. So now we've been developing for eight. And all
should
of the
I define
that,
dog
that
fooding?
We've been developing. Excuse me?
Should I define dog fooding, or should we just assume people know what you're talking about?
Eating your own dog food.
I love it, though. Like, I've never heard it said
Google
that
every
way.
Day kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm dog fooding. I love it. So it's a big enough project that it really is a good test for Mono.
Yeah, it means that we are using our own software to develop our own software. So we kind of find out the mistakes before our end users find the mistakes. So that's kind of the idea behind dogfooding. You don't let the user do the testing. You yourself start doing the testing of your own product.
Well, I want to wrap this up because we've kept Miguel long enough. When I called him, Chris, he was writing documentation, and we certainly don't want to ever stop a programmer from writing documentation. It's the most important.
It happens so rarely.
So rarely, exactly. Thank you, Miguel.
God. I always sound like an idiot.
No. Miguel, you got to stop this self-deprecation, man.
We're going to have to get Nat on. That's it.
Have you ever? Yeah, you should get Nat on. It's a lot more fun.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks, Miguel.
Hey, thank you, guys.
That's Miguel de Icaza, who is, despite his self-deprecation, really one of the great guys in the business. I'm really thrilled to have had a chance to talk to him, Chris.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty terrific. And I wanted to say something that I didn't want him to hear. So one of the things, he's really embarrassed about this, but if anybody listening to this podcast is in Mexico City, there's a video, okay? There's a video of Miguel.
It's his native city.
Yeah. So he's from Mexico City. And a television station there, did a dramatization of his life.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding at all. And it's done very much in a telenovela style. So
oh,
it's very
my
dramatic.
God.
Yeah,
oh,
have to get a copy of this video, right? Because, you know, he talks about it. And he's clearly, he gets, like, red and he's all embarrassed. But, like there are these scenes where they have these actors playing Miguel and Nat. I think we're going to have to sail to Novara. And the music goes, dun, 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 you know?
Oh, I've got to see this.
I know.
All right, we'll find it.
We've got to know about it.
Yeah, we have to know. So send us an email, chris@thisweekintech.com or leo@thisweekintech.com. And if you can find it, we will digitize it. We will deliver it to the world. We'll put it on Google Video. Let the world see it.
Yeah,
Chris, it's a pleasure. Next week, we've got some great people lined up. Larry Augustin's going to be with us. Mm-hmm. Talk to Brian Ahern from the MySQL group. There's a lot of good open source stuff to talk about.
Yep.
And we look forward to it. We'll hope we'll see you next week for another Floss Weekly.